I was watching a, just said, come on down, and I'm reminded, I'm going to vamp here for a second while the crowd comes, that I was watching a on YouTube the pilot episode of the revival of The Price is Right, and the announcer says something like, Jim Smith, you're selected. Dave Brown, you're selected. And it just didn't have the ring of come on down. That once they added that, the whole thing got much better. So thanks for being back, and we have an exciting afternoon for you. One of the traditions at Rain over the years has always been our legal panel. It's an important topic for the world of online radio. As Brad has been writing about in Rain News, there's lots going on right now between Congress, the Copyright Office, the Department of Justice, the Copyright Royalty Board. All of those organizations in Washington have things going on. They are considering changing the way that digital music services pay for the music that they play. So here to moderate a discussion around music licensing services is partner in the Washington, D.C. law firm of Wilkinson, Barker, and Naur, David Oxenford.
Oh, come on, yeah. This is the session you've all been waiting for. I know why you come to the Rain Summit, to talk about music licensing. We've got a great panel to talk about all the issues that are going on in the music world. Gary Greenstein, a lawyer, formerly general counsel of Sound Exchange, but he's seen the light and now represents Broadcast Services. Yes, cop for that too. David Levin from BMI, in charge of all things digital at BMI. Brad Pendergrast from Sound Exchange, he's the guy who collects all those royalties that you pay and makes sure that you pay him. And then Alex Luke, who's got an incredible, varied background. Broadcaster, the iTunes store started, worked for Napster, worked for a record company, and is now a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. I mean, what kind of panel is this to talk about all of the legal issues that are surrounding digital music in Washington and elsewhere? We've got so much going on right now. The Copyright Royalty Board is about to set the royalties for the next 5 years for streaming. We've got the Department of Justice looking at ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC royalties. Those boring ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC royalties that haven't changed for years and years and years and now may suddenly be upon us. We've got Congress looking at all the copyright issues. We've got songwriters complaining. We've got services complaining. The songwriters say they aren't getting enough. The services say they're paying too much. What do we do? So how do we bridge this divide where people are saying that services, we can't afford to pay the royalties that we're paying. Songwriters are saying we're not getting enough money. David, what's the deal here? Why is there such a divide?
I think there's a divide when we think about broadcast radio and the way that broadcast radio has monetized and the way the pure play internet radio is monetizing now. There's just a lot more music use in internet radios, in pure play internet radios. Stations like, you know, businesses like Pandora obviously use a lot more music than a broadcast radio traditionally uses and subsequently don't monetize as well. And so broadcast radio monetizes on a per track basis twice as well, two times what Pandora monetizes. So when we talk about, you know, a fair compensation for songwriters, which is what BMI is arguing and is our mandate, we look at, you know, how much money these services are making, and we want a robust marketplace. We want there to be lots of internet radio stations, broadcasters in the marketplace. We want pure plays out there in the marketplace. But it's about fairly compensating the songwriter. And when you have services that monetize half as well as the traditional stations have monetized, it results in lower payments to those songwriters.
So Gary, are the services that you and I represent, are our clients just doing a bad job of making money so they can't pay more money?
So I'll start with throwing a couple of bombs. I don't believe that, number one, the issue is that internet radio is not monetizing appropriately. Remember, you're talking about Pandora, which is only 10 years old. They're going up against an industry that counts its existence in decades. The growth of revenue of Pandora is nothing short of phenomenal. And the worst thing that could happen to artists right now, both songwriters and recording artists, is to be subject to the rates that rights owners are trying to impose upon them. And it's not that artists and songwriters are, I think, not believing that the rates aren't high enough. If the artists and songwriters follow blindly the publishers and the record labels that are allegedly representing them, you will find that songwriters and recording artists will be much worse off, and broadcasters and other people need to get that message out. You do away with transparency through the PROs. So if the PROs are subject to withdrawals...
Explain the PROs. Who are the
Performing
PROs?
Rights organizations, ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. So one of the things that the largest music publishers want right now is the ability to withdraw from ASCAP and BMI the right to license digital services, so Pandora, Spotify, but under the current Department of Justice thinking, it would not apply to a terrestrial radio station's over-the-air signal or simulcast. That's a bit of inside baseball information. It's not been publicly released, although lots of people know it, and Billboard reported it last week. If publishers withdraw, songwriters will not be guaranteed direct payment. If record labels force people outside of the statutory license, you will not have $400 million from Pandora being paid through Sound Exchange. It will go directly to the record labels, be subject to recoupment. So the people who think they're being protected, I think, are being led blindly to their detriment. And you should be very wary of the argument that not enough money is being paid. You need to think about the greater ecosystem. More people are getting their music played now to a wider audience than ever before. Terrestrial radio, by nature, has a narrow playlist. That is not the constraint that exists with internet radio.
Brad, I see you've got that microphone. You just want to jump in and say something.
Yeah, there are a couple things that I agree with Gary with respect to the importance of transparency, and that is something that the statutory license provides. What I would add to the conversation is that there are some structural problems in how things are currently, the current state of affairs. I think the perception and the reality as well is that all creators should be paid fairly on all platforms whenever their content is being used. And that's not happening right now. And this is the major source of concern for both songwriters and recording artists and record labels and publishers. On the sound recording side, pre-72 recordings are not often paid for by digital music services. Second, digital music services need to pay for the use of the sound recording when AM/FM radio does not need to, and that presents a completely different cost structure for those two different platforms, and that's not fair. The other thing too is that some services, such as SiriusXM for their satellite service, get to pay under an antiquated standard that's different than what a willing buyer and a willing seller would agree to. All of these things reinforce the idea, and likewise on the songwriter side, where there's a perception that the consent decrees depress the fair market value of their musical works. All of these components contribute to an atmosphere where songwriters, record labels, recording artists, publishers don't believe that they're being paid fairly in every instance. And I think that's the big part of the disconnect that you mentioned at the beginning.
Okay, there's a couple of things everybody should keep clear. Sound Exchange collects for the record labels and the performers. BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC collect for the music, the guys who write the words and music to songs, and the publishing companies that represent, that hold the copyrights to those songs.
And just to talk to the monetization, there's some fundamental differences in how those rights are feed. On the sound recording side, they're feed for on a per play. Every single play incurs a performance royalty. On the songwriter side, for BMI, it's a percentage of the revenue from the services that's generated. Obviously, there's a percentage of revenue in the sound exchange piece as well. But in the sound and the performance side, it's purely a percentage of revenue. So when we talk about monetization, if these services made more money, there'd be more money for the services, there'd be more money for the songwriters. So it's not songwriters getting more blood from the stone necessarily. It's fair compensation. It's wanting these businesses to do better, which the businesses we know want to do well. And as Gary said, they've grown, you know, significantly. It's the continued growth of these services that we need to see. And we need to see better monetization from the services so the songwriters get better.
So Alex, looking at it from the broad perspective that you've got and from your current perspective as a guy who looks at the financials of companies, what do you think?
Well, I think David's point is a valid one, that there's a short-term view on it and a long-term view on it, and a lot of what needs to take place in the marketplace now for a lot of these models to develop and platforms to develop may not be what's appropriate 5, even 10 years down the road. And I think we always look at things very holistically, and the sort of death of the music business has been exaggerated from our point of view. The label business has been whacked, and it's down. The record label business is down, 50% or more, depending on who you talk to. But if you look across advertising models, subscription models, and sales models for the monetization of recorded music as a whole, the business is only off by about 17 or 18% from 1999, and it's healthy, and it's definitely going through a tremendous period of transition, but we see it being bigger than ever on the other side of this.
Gary, do you have something else to jump in?
A couple of things here. David's right that the current rate regimes distinguish between how liabilities are determined. That is not set in statute, and it is not set in the consent decree. Those are both the product of litigations or arbitrations. So it's not as though the law requires that different treatment, number one.
And let's, again, to just jump in so that everybody's on the same page, ASCAP and BMI are subject to antitrust consent decrees, which is what the Department of Justice is looking at changing that we're talking about. Sound Exchange, their royalty rates are set by a government panel, the Copyright Royalty Board.
The other thing I want to mention is when you talk about services are not monetizing or paying enough, Pandora, if it were paying royalties under the rates established by the Copyright Royalty Board, for many years would have paid more than 100% of its revenue just for the use of the sound recording. And that's not taking into account what they would have had to pay for the public performance of the musical work or SG&A. Marty Bandier, the CEO of Sony ATV Music Publishing, has mentioned publicly that he wants parity between what songwriters and music publishers get paid and what the record labels get paid. Right now, Pandora is paying roughly 46% of revenue. They're a public company, so you can look it up. And the vast majority of that is for the sound recording right. If you were to talk about parity, and you were to put the sound exchange rates as established by the CRB on top of Pandora, and the publishers did get parity, you're talking somewhere of 150 or more percent of Pandora's revenues.
They'll make it up on volume.
Yes, exactly.
Well, they should make it up on more they should make it up in more revenue. There should be better monetization of their service if the revenues.
So David, how does that happen? I mean, don't you think these services are trying to monetize?
Well, I'll jump in on that one. I think the one component to add to the conversation is that Pandora has pursued a very smart strategy of seeking as much share of listenership as it can. And to do that, to attract the listeners, it's kept its ad load down in order to entice people to continue to listen to the service. It has only a couple of minutes of advertising every hour compared to the 12, 15 minutes that AM/FM radio plays. That's David's point there, that Pandora could pursue greater monetization, greater ad load, and therefore increase its monetization. One thing I would say in response to Gary's point as well, Pandora is operating under these pure play rates, and it publicly discusses this in its SEC filings, that were set as an accommodation in 2008, 2009, when the previous royalty rates were set by the judges were thought to be too high. And Sound Exchange and pure play webcasters entered into a deal that would provide these alternative rates that Pandora has been using for the last 5 years. And that's a deal that we made, and we live by that deal, and that deal has worked out very well for Pandora. But those rates are roughly one half of what the judges set, and the time has come for that subsidy to end. There are a lot of other services in here that are not getting the benefit of the pure play rates, especially those that are simulcasting.
We'll find out whether the time has come when the judges render their decision December, what the royalty rates would be. But one of the questions, you talk about monetization, and one of the questions that we've seen debated all over and was discussed on some of these earlier panels was subscription, doing subscription as opposed to the freemium models. And we've heard about Tidal and how they're going to get all the money back to the artists. And at the same time, we've heard some other services saying, well, maybe the $9.99 a month for All That You Can Eat Music is too high, and we have to bring that down. Alex, what's the deal? Subscription, non-subscription?
Yeah, I think freemium is a really bad word. It misrepresents what the free versions of these platforms are. My 14-year-old daughter is all over YouTube and the free version of Spotify, and she endures the ads. And their advertising models, like terrestrial radio, is an advertising model. And there are tens of billions of dollars that are collected in advertising revenue around music every year. And online, even around search terms, you have entities like EMI building up Katy Perry as a brand name, and the goodwill of that search phrase is typed into the Google box, millions of times, and generating over $1 billion in revenue for Google. Search terms are, it's a $1 to $2 billion industry that didn't exist 14 years ago. And I think we really have to start looking at the three silos as separate platforms: advertising, subscription, and sales, and address them individually. Even if a platform has an advertising side and a subscription side, the way that's monetized, the way that's packaged for the user, and the way that money travels back to the rights holders, I think has to be tackled on a case-by-case basis. The one takeaway from this panel I would want to convey to everyone is that there's not one blanket cure-all to this. I mean, you're talking about 15 different variations on a theme that deserve 15 different models and 15 different conversations. And I do hope the copyright legislation, when it comes down, is complex enough to address that.
Yeah, I mean, to the question of subscription and advertising, as Alex was saying, there needs to be more differential between these products. You have too much similarity. The minimal advertising that you put up with for a service like Pandora or a free version of Spotify, it's a pretty darn good product for free. What's the incentive to spend $10? There needs to be more differential. These services will generate, obviously, a lot more revenue if they're based on subscription dollars than on advertising dollars, and that'll generate a lot more money for all of the copyright holders here. But these products are too similar today, and that's grown over time, and that's a problem in the industry.
So is the alternative to Pandora running more ads going terrestrial radio, subscription, or is it piracy? I mean, where will people end up going?
Piracy, YouTube, there's always going to be places where consumers can get free access to music, and it's going to be, YouTube's much better than piracy, right? At least there's advertising revenue there. But when you have services, like a Spotify who offer multiple products, there's just not enough differentiation, I think, in those products. We heard Anthony earlier talk about RDO and how their free product is only radio. I think that's a good model where you see there's an added value to actually paying that $10 a month for a subscription that I don't think you see across the board. Not every consumer is going to want to pay $10 a month. There should be products for all different types of consumers, but there should be some value to that higher premium
Gary?
Product.
I don't know RDO's numbers. I would look at the reported figures, though, of Spotify and the number of subscribers they talk about. I think differentiation is more of a product issue. There is market demand for lean back versus lean forward radio services. The monetization issue is something that I think, look where SoundExchange has gone in 10 years. SoundExchange alone from Pandora is over $400 million. When you add in Sirius satellite radio and a handful of broadcasters, you're up at close to $900 million a year. ASCAP broke $1 billion a year in performance royalties alone. That's not coming from bars and restaurants. That's coming from services, digital radio services, or interactive streaming services. I think the argument here is wrong. Congress is intended for there to be free radio. If Congress did not intend for that, there would not be a statutory category called eligible non-subscription transmission services. This desire to force people to have to charge a fee so that the American public has to pay is not what Congress intended. It is what the record industry, in my opinion, wants to see, because as people pay for radio services, so if you require Pandora to charge, and then Pandora is going up against Spotify, Pandora will have to add more functionality, which would then take them outside the statutory license, which then removes the 50-50 split of royalties and allows the record labels once again to take a packaging deduction, a new media fee, and other gimmicks that deprive artists of the royalties that they are entitled to.
Again, just so everybody understands, the current statutory royalty that Pandora broadcasters, when they're streaming, pay for applies only to non-interactive services, services where you can't pick the next song. If you're an interactive service, you've got to go negotiate directly to get the rights to the music and pay whatever the copyright holder asks for, essentially. The non-interactive royalties, the ones set by the Copyright Royalty Board, again, only apply to the non-interactive services.
And I'm not suggesting that Pandora should become a subscription-based model. I'm saying there should be internet radio. There are definitely different consumers who want to lean back and want to lean forward. Those who want to lean forward, who want to spend money for them, who are willing to pay for a subscription, should get something more for that. And I'm not sure that there's not enough more there. That was my point, not that Pandora should be paid.
Before you jump in, Alex, one question for you, Brad. The numbers that Gary just threw out, so SoundExchange is collecting about $1 billion for the sound recording performance royalty that applies only for digital. ASCAP and BMI are about $2 billion for a royalty that applies to terrestrial radio as well as to digital. Does that suggest that you guys are collecting too much money?
Short answer is no. First of all, we distributed $773 million last year. We're not quite at $1 billion, but thank you for the optimistic view. I appreciate it. I think that to answer your question about whether the trending is going in the right direction, I think that, implicit in all this discussion is how listenership is moving away from owning downloads, owning physical. Those are declining and moving toward streaming, toward access. And SoundExchange's numbers simply reflect that trend. We distributed $20 million 10 years ago. We distributed $773 million last year. That's a reflection of where the industry is going.
And radio is just, I'll add, radio is the listeners are shifting away from broadcast to digital, which is monetizing less than broadcast radio is. So it's just not good for anybody.
But paying recording artists who were not paid previously.
Well, for now.
Alex?
Well, I just wanted to add one thing to this conversation as we, if you look at it on a sliding scale, you've got services where 70% of the revenue collected goes back to rights holders, and then you've got, terrestrial radio and some digital platforms that are on the opposite end of the spectrum, and like I said, from my perspective, every one of these is a conversation. And even though the consumer may be looking at subscribing to one service, they will have a place they go to experience that sort of lean back experience and a place they go for the lean forward experience there's a solid notion that three or four of these services can coexist and offer very meaningful different things to consumers and send different percentages of their revenue back to rights holders because they're getting more.
So we're going to take some questions, and John is wandering around with a microphone. Let me just ask one other question to you guys. Do consumers really care that much about music? I mean, if you're pushing folks to a more subscription-based model or a model where there's a lot more advertising, or do consumers really care that much generally for music?
You have different consumers, obviously, across the spectrum. More consumers want the lean back, just want programming, music programmed to them that are willing to lean forward. And that's just always going to be, there was always more people who listened to radio than bought CDs.
Okay. Anthony.
So, hey, gentlemen. Listening to this, it's sort of interesting. So I know you know the answer to this. How many countries on the planet have a regulatory regime like the United States?
I would love to speak to that because I went through this pain when we rolled out iTunes globally. And one of the things that I think has happened in the last 10 years as music has migrated into the digital arena is that you have performance rights organizations and labels and hardware and software companies in different countries doing radically different things and putting down radically different legislation. And what it's led to is a world that's more fragmented than ever. You've got countries where piracy is through the roof. You've got countries where mobile is through the roof. You've got countries where subscription services are booming. Other places where it's still all about physical. Japan, you can still rent CDs. The differentiation of the markets has become more pronounced, and it's going to make the future music business, the business side of the future of the music business, much more difficult globally.
And it already is. I mean, but the other answer to that question is there isn't a statutory rate anywhere else. So we're licensed in 85 countries. We go through exactly the scenario you're describing. What happens if the government didn't decide? And you end up with a willing buyer, willing seller. You also end up with that in this country if you have non-interactive licensing. So isn't there sort of a larger question here is what should be regulated? How much of this is appropriate to regulate? And the fact that you're having a discussion about what the rates should be that are not between willing buyers and willing sellers is somewhat fascinating. We deal with this every day. I completely agree with what Alex said. It's a nightmare, but it's a nightmare in everywhere else on the planet, but here, and here it's just a different nightmare.
Yeah, the issue, though, is what are the different regimes that apply to, say, copyright ownership limitations? Just to say that the U.S. does not result in fair market value being paid, I think probably oversimplifies the entire debate. I would also say that the U.S. is the largest music market in the world, generating the most money. So I think we're probably doing something right here.
Back here.
And there are statutory royalties in some other countries as well, Canada.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the reason that
Australia,
I think
Canada,
why
Zealand.
Pandora is only in, what, three territories?
Right. Okay.
Right.
Question in the back.
Yeah. Is there anything on the table to change the 1 second constituting a play? It's really punitive right now to broadcasters. And it's out of sync with some other forms of music.
Right. That's up to your lawyers to litigate, because that is also not in the statute. That is something that was defined in the first webcaster proceeding, that the definition of a performance is all or any portion of a sound recording. It's a pretty silly rule, and it's one that it would be very useful if broadcasters were trying to get that changed.
And that, in fact, is an issue that's being considered in the current rate proceeding. So again, stay tuned, see what the decision is in December.
Hi, this is Dave from Custom Channels. I wonder if the panel could talk for a second about this, the idea that artists and organizations pulling out of ASCAP and BMI specifically, but now we see, you know, certain artists like Taylor Swift with Spotify. This idea that we might be moving away from a blanket or statutory kind of license regime. I know Spotify doesn't normally exist in that anyway, but certainly for the pros it does. What kind of complications could that create? I see a lot of problems with service providers needing to go and get individual rights from all these different agencies.
I can speak to that. So, I mean, obviously the PROs, BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, you know, they offer collective licensing is a great value to the marketplace, and we recognize that, and that's what we do. That said, we also have to make sure that there's fair compensation for the rights that we're managing. And if the publishers, ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, we don't own any of the rights. We're agents of the publishers who own those rights. And if those publishers believe that in the marketplace they're not getting fair market value for their repertoire because of the constraints that their agents have on them because of these consent decrees, well, then we support them going to the market and getting free fair market value for it. And that's part of our conversation with the Department of Justice right now. One of our asks is to allow for these digital rights withdrawal.
And think about, basically, for you guys who are users of music, what that would mean is you no longer write checks to ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC, but you also have to write checks to whichever publishers have withdrawn from ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC to license
if they choose to. I mean, the collective licensing is still an option for them, and, you know, many, I'm sure, will stay, but, you know, some...
Right, although I think an issue there is if you pull out and you find that people don't hear your music, should you be allowed right back in? So one of the arguments for publishers, if a publisher thinks that it can get more money by pulling out of a PRO, what the Department of Justice is thinking about is, first they have to give advance notice of a certain duration, maybe 6 months is currently what the department is thinking, and then you would have to stay out for a year. What if you made that 3 years, and if you pulled out and you thought you could get more money, and you found out that iHeartMedia or Pandora or Spotify said, you know what, we don't really need your music, we're going to go without it. All of a sudden, those artists that are signed to you or those songwriters may find that they're not going to make any money. don't feel that, you know, if Taylor Swift did not have her music played on every radio station in America, would every teenage girl have discovered it? Broadcasters have a lot of power. You have a limited playlist. If you choose not to play someone, you may find that people are willing to pay you and give you consideration, and the broadcasters have proposed changes to the payola rules. Alex, you want a free market, allow that to happen.
Alex, we got 1 minute before we're kicked off stage.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, there's a long-term effect and a short-term effect to everything we're talking about here, and this is a perfect example of it, that an artist or a rights holder can make a decision that will have a tremendous, potentially positive effect for them short-term and could kill them long-term. And I think, you know, as this debate moves ahead, everyone's got to think and about this through both filters.
As you can see, this is not a simple issue. There are no easy answers for these things. These will be resolved, again, by all sorts of different groups, the courts, the Department of Justice, Congress, Copyright Royalty Board. Stay tuned, tackle us afterwards, and we can give you all the details that we probably could have done if Kurt had given us 4 hours to talk here this afternoon.
Yeah, Kurt, give us more time.
But in any event, please join me in thanking this panel for explaining these hard issues.